Amen. All right, Proverbs chapter 8 tonight. Proverbs chapter 8. And this first section of Proverbs, we're getting close to the end of the first section. Chapters 1 through 9 cover a series of lectures that a father is giving to his son. I know every son feels like if his dad's talking, he's lecturing, but this is actual instruction here that he's giving. And so that goes from chapters 1 through 9, and then there's a big chunk there for most of the rest of the book where there are more collections of sayings that aren't as connected. They are connected, but not as much so as these first 9 verses. So tonight in chapter 8, and really beginning last week in chapter 7, the father is really kind of bringing things to a climax as he's given a lot of instruction, a lot of counsel, a lot of here's how to do things right, here's how to use wisdom, this is important, and things like that. And now he started kind of building it towards the end as he illustrates, kind of dramatizes what this looks like. And last week when in chapter 7, he really dramatized what it looks like with the lady Folly or the seductress and how she is out there to snatch away the simple or the foolish. And so now he's really trying to clinch in his son's mind how important it is that he uses wisdom, this life skill, as he goes forward. And so we're going to break this chapter up into 2 sermons. So this week we'll cover the first half, and then it kind of naturally breaks here, and we'll cover the next half, Lord willing, next Wednesday night. But let's look here at Proverbs chapter 8. And tonight we'll look at verses 1 through 21, and we'll go ahead and read that together as we look at this. Proverbs chapter 8, beginning here in verse 1. He says, "Doth not wisdom cry, to call out or to yell out, and understanding put forth her voice? She," talking about Lady Wisdom here, "she standeth in the top of the high places, by the way in the places of the paths." Sorry, I was distracted by a flying bottle there. Okay, in places of the past. Verse 3, she crieth at the gates, at the entry of the city, at the coming in, at the doors. "Unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of man. O ye simple, understand wisdom, and ye fools, be of an understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak of excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall speak truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the words of my mouth are in righteousness, and there is nothing froward or perverse in them. They are all plain to them, to him that understandeth, and right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver, and knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence, and find out knowledge of witty inventions. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Pride, arrogancy, and evil way, and the froward mouth do I hate. Counsel is mine, and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. By me kings reign, and princes decree justice. By me princes rule, and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. Riches and honor are with me, yea, durable riches and righteousness. My fruit is better than gold, yea, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I lead in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of judgment, that I may cause those that love me to inherit substance, and I will fill their treasures." And we'll leave off the reading there, and next week we'll continue. But tonight I want to focus on this cry of wisdom, and really wisdom's invitation is what we're calling this tonight, wisdom's invitation. It's getting towards graduation time. And so, no doubt, there are invitations, graduation announcements that begin to come in from folks. And usually, that's a time where it makes you feel old, doesn't it? Because there's people sending you graduation announcements that are supposed to be in kindergarten, and then that happens. And I say that knowing that my doom is near, because I have a son that's now in first grade, and here in a couple weeks, we're going to be getting a graduation thing, I guess. I don't know. That's what I'm told, that it just happens like that. So I don't want to think about that. It's not supposed to make you feel old. Those announcements have their purposes. And really, there's two. A graduation announcement has two purposes. It is to recognize the profound influence you've had on their life, and they're wanting to share this this milestone with you because of the mutual love that you have for each other, and they want money. That's really the two reasons why you get those in the mail. It's true. That's how it goes. Now, wedding invitations, same idea, but it is. It's an important event, and I had some friends from out east, and I had never heard of this before. Living in this area, you know, you go to a wedding or something like that, and there's a wedding, there's a reception. It's just real informal and things. But there are places where it's a big deal, and it's not just if you're invited. You may be invited to the wedding. But then there are a select group of people that are invited to the reception. That's like the elite. Not everybody gets that part of the invitation. There's a little RSVP thing in there, and I don't know what that means, except you're supposed to send it back and check a box, okay? And so that, I don't know why they don't just say send it back and check a box, but they put RSVP to be fancy, I guess. They just can't spell is what it is. So they just make up something. And so you send that in to say, I'll be coming, prepare for my family or whatever, and things like that. And it's because there are some invitations that are restricted. And in some big deals, it's a big deal if you get invited to the reception or not. And then that can be another big deal in another way, and that can be uncomfortable. Sometimes there's invitations to a restricted event, like a presidential thing. I've never been invited to a presidential thing, but it was exciting, and then I'm sure it would be exciting. I like to follow the Apple computer industry, iPhones and things like that, and every once in a while there will be a story about how a person was invited to come before they even released the new gizmo or whatever it is, and they are invited to go check it out with the president of Apple or whatever. They'll sit down and show them these things so that whenever they release it, they can have some articles in the shoot that are promoting it or whatever. And so those are exclusive invitations and kind of a first chance to see something. And so invitations are like that. Nobody wants to be left out. It's one of those things. It's an honor to do that. It's not usually available to everyone. That's why there's an invitation. But whenever we look here at wisdom, we're kind of in the invitation mode in chapter 8, because in chapter 9 we saw the seductress's invitation, or hers was more like a proposition, where she was inviting that foolish and simple young man to come with her and enjoy all the pleasures of sexual sin, and we saw that her invitation is very aggressive, and it ends, I mean, the last verse of chapter 7 tells us it ends in a death chamber, and that's not the kind of invitation you'd want to accept at all. And so now we look at the other woman in the story, and this is Lady Wisdom, and her invitation provides an interesting comparison and contrast to Lady Folly or to the seductress. And in the end, it's much better, and so they couldn't be more different in their nature. But there are some similarities, so it's just interesting to compare the two with how they send out their invitation, how they send out their message. So let's just work our way through here tonight at the call of wisdom. It begins here in verse 1 where she's crying, putting out her voice. She's definitely declaring this, almost like a preacher on the corner, you know, just declaring this invitation, declaring what she has to say. And look at her location. In verse 2 it says that She stands there on top of the high places, the places of the paths, verse 3, the gates, the entry to the city, the coming in at the door. So as you would come into the city where Lady Wisdom is shown, as you would come into the door of the gate, if there was a big wall like a castle around there, and then there's the door, as you would walk in, she would be standing right there. Now this is a picture, it's poetic, it's figurative, okay? But as you would come in, she's right there, and she's right there sending out her message and inviting people to follow the ways of wisdom. And that's important because before they even get into the city, before they start making their way through the market where they're selling stuff, certainly before they get to that side street where Lady Folly is hanging out, she wants to get to them first. So as they come in, she's there ready to give her invitation and to try to draw them in. And she's saying, listen, you need wisdom before you even get into this stuff in here. It may be good, it may be bad, but you need wisdom to know the difference. It's like a person standing at the door with a program so that you know you need this to know what's going on. We're kind of we're starting in the bulletin thing again, and we're still figuring that out, you know. And so, you know, as you come in, here's a bulletin, and as a visitor comes in especially, we want them to kind of be oriented and know that we have a nursery and we have, you know, just a few things, trying to give folks a little bit of an idea of what is this thing that they've come into. And that's what Lady Wisdom is doing. She's saying, listen, as you come in, I'm going to be hollering out. I'm going to be available. I'm going to be available before you even make your way through this maze of life. You need to listen to what I have to say. And look at who she talks to. Verse 4 and 5. She says, unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. She mentions the simple and the fool in verse 5. And so, really, is to men and the sons of man, basically any human person is what she's talking about. This is not an exclusive invitation. It doesn't matter what caste you're in, if you're rich or if you're poor or if you're just very well-to-do or if you're a leper coming into the city. She says, if you're a man or a son of man, if you're an adult, if you're a child, that's what she's saying there. The gender here is not important. She's just saying it's to all people. To all people, it's an open invitation to anyone. And look at this. I find this very interesting. She points out in verse 5 the simple. And of course, we know the simple Simon, the person there, like we've given the example there, the person who's just starting out in life and doesn't have a lot of experience. That's who Lady Folly was after, remember? She found the simple ones. He said, among the simple ones, there is the youth void of understanding. Lady Wisdom is after the simple as well, because she knows that if she doesn't get to him, somebody else will, and she's waiting for him. And so she goes for those who are simple, but then also the very next line there says to the fools. She says she's also hollering out to those who have already messed up, to those who have already chosen foolishness. Aren't you glad that you've messed up some things in your life? It's not like, well, it's over. It's over. I can't do anything. Yeah, she's there because there are those who have messed up. There are those who have said something dumb. There are those who have acted foolish. And Lady Wisdom is available. And so if you're partway down a wrong path, Lady Wisdom is there, and she's there. If you happen by Lady Wisdom, she's not going to look at you and say, well, you've messed up your life too much. Just move on. There's no help for you. No, it's available. Her invitation is open to anyone who is within the sound of her voice. That invitation is open to anyone who will listen. And so she begins hollering out here in verse 6. Hear. It's almost like saying, now hear this. She's just hollering out. And here's what her message is. Now, she's not giving all the answers here. This is an invitation. She's just explaining, she's kind of listing more or less her resume. We're really going to look at her resume next week in the last half of the chapter. But she's starting to outline a little bit of what her message is. She's not going to give you all the instruction that she has. She's just going to tell you what her instruction is like. So verses 6 through 9 or so here, that there are these key words just scattered throughout. She says, I will speak of excellent things. The word excellent there is refers to being high class or of royalty. This is important, righteous things. This is a high level instruction. She says the things I'm going to give you are tip top. Okay, they're high class things, excellent things. The opening of my lips shall be right things, things that are fair and upright is what she's saying. Verse 7, for my mouth will speak truth, what is true. And then the opposite of that is the very next line, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. She says, I'm going to say what is true, and I'm not going to say what is wrong. If it hurts and it's true, you're probably going to hear it. I'm not going to candy coat it. And if it's wicked, you're not going to hear it from my lips. It's not going to happen. She's very consistent. Verse 8, all the words of my mouth are righteousness. And again, contrasting it, there's nothing forward or perverse in them. What I have to say is right. And then she expounds on that in verse 9. They're not froward or perverse. They're not twisted. They are all plain, verse 9, to them that have knowledge, and right to them that find knowledge. What she's saying is, I'm going to tell you like it is. I'm going to shoot straight with you, is what she's saying. Now that can't be any more different from the Proverbs 7 woman that we looked at last week. Remember her? She would say whatever it took in order to catch her prey. She dressed like a free prostitute, even though she was married already. She talked about having sacrifices and being an upright, devout person, and all, I mean, she manufactured all kinds of things to in order to seduce somebody, and none of it was true. You couldn't believe a thing that she said because she was not interested in the truth. Lady Wisdom couldn't be any more opposite. She says what is right. She says what is true. She's telling those who pass by, listen, I'm going to tell you exactly like it is. I'm going to tell you the truth. You may not like it. I'm not doing this to try to win you over, but I'm going to give you the truth, and that's what you need. And you know what? I think most people know that that's what they need. I've talked to people just inviting folks to church, and I don't try to tell people like, oh, you'll love our church, and we are a loving church and things, and I don't mind mentioning that to folks, but what I like telling people is, look, we preach the Bible, we love people, but we preach the Bible, and we tell it like it is, and that's what I need. I mean, that's what I need. That's what this preacher needs, that. I don't need a candy-coated something. I need the truth, because if I need candy-coated something, I'll go to Dairy Queen and get ice cream. Eventually, right? But I'm not gonna. I need to stop doing that. But anyway, if I want the truth, then I need wisdom, and that's what Lady Wisdom is saying here. Is I can give this to you, and then also, verses 10 and 11. She says, here's the value of what I have to say. You can take this to the bank. She says, receive my instruction, not silver. She compares it to choice gold, to rubies. She said, all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. This is valuable. This is very valuable. This is your life that you're talking about. This is not temporary riches. This isn't your net worth that's going to fluctuate up and down and that's going to change throughout your life. No, this is for your life. Say, is it really that big of a deal? Absolutely. Absolutely. This is not the temporary thrill that Lady Folly offers. She offers a temporary thrill that would be enjoyable, and she brings people in that are into the temporary thrill. But Lady Wisdom, standing right there at the gate, says, you want something lasting. You want something that is durable. You want something that is going to last, and so that's what she has to offer. For the next chunk here, from verses 12 through 21, really the rest of the chapter here is divided into two sections. And in this first chunk, she kind of describes her qualities. And then the next chunk, verses 22, really on there through the rest of the chapter, she gives her resume as God uses wisdom. And she, I mean, that's a reason to use wisdom right there, that God used wisdom. But we're going to talk about that next week. So for this section, we're just going to take the time to look here at how she describes her qualities. She's already described a little bit about what she has to say. She's going to shoot straight. What she says is right. But now she's going to say, here's what comes along with wisdom. Here's what you get if you follow my ways. And so here are the qualities of wisdom. In verse 12, she says, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. I love that verse. It just gives a lot. There's a lot there. It says that she dwells with prudence. Wisdom is like the Siamese twin of prudence. They're together. So what is prudence? I told my wife, prudence is not your Mennonite babysitter. That's something else. Anyway, I thought it was hilarious, and she rolled her eyes at me like all of you are thinking about right now, and that's fine. But I just thought that would be a cool name, prudence. Anyway, I can think that. You don't have to think that. So anyway, so prudence. So she dwells with prudence. And what she says here, prudence is an interesting word. It has a weird meaning. It doesn't seem good at first. The word prudence means to be tricky or crafty, or, you know, to be sneaky almost. But it's a positive side of that. It's not to be crafty and sneaky like you would trick someone. It means you know all of the inner workings of how something works. You know the things that are under the surface. And that's why that next line says to find out knowledge of witty inventions. And kind of that dark wisdom that Solomon talked about in chapter 1. How he talked about how with wisdom you'll understand not just the surface level things, but kind of the meaning underneath it and how things work deep down. There are some things in life that are tricky, aren't there? There's a lot of things in life that are tricky. If you're married to a lady, then you found something tricky in your life. And it's a little bit difficult to understand at times, but that's okay. It's worth it. It really is. I'm going to get in big trouble now, but that's true. But anyway, so you need to know how they work. You need to, not just your wives, but you need to know how these tricky things in life work. If you don't know that, then you're not going to be able to do life well. Right now, in our presidential election drama that's going on, there's a lot of discussion about how delegates work. I don't think anybody knows how delegates work. But anyway, but evidently it's important right now because it looks like it's going to come down to something like that. And there's a lot of talk about people, well, this is how delegates work. And so there are some that are trying to figure to work that in the way that would be, I guess we could say, wise. I mean, if they're going to win, then that's what they should try to do. And then there are others that are saying, I don't understand how that works. And they're a little nervous about that. And there's everyone in between. And I don't know that they're, I've heard even this morning, I read something that says the rules will change before they even get there. I don't even know, okay? But that's a tricky thing, isn't it? And there's a lot of things like that. And if you're going to be wise, you're going to need to understand how things work under the surface. And wisdom does that. As I was looking at this term, this witty inventions, this dark wisdom thing, it reminded me of part of a story by C.S. Lewis. I enjoy reading him. He's got some interesting things. Some of C.S. Lewis's things, he uses a lot of allegories. And so sometimes it's a little deeper, but he tells a lot of stories to help explain biblical truth is what he does. And he has a very interesting series called The Chronicles of Narnia. And you may have read that, and they're very interesting. They were written for kids, but really give a lot of illustrations of how biblical things work. And one of the things that he did in one of the early books called The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, he has this main character named Aslan, who is a lion. And Aslan represents, he doesn't say it in the book, but as you read it, he represents Christ. And he is the maker of the land and things like that. And so throughout the story, Aslan ends up getting, he ends up being killed on a massive stone table. And he's killed by the bad guy, which is the White Witch, I think they call her in there. And as you read into the story, they say that he actually sacrificed himself in place of one of the young men who had turned over to the wicked side and had betrayed the lion and all that was good in order to go over there. So the analogy there is very, very clear. He gave himself. He died in the place of that young man. And I'm going to spoil the story here. If you haven't read the book, it's a very interesting story. But the morning after the lion Aslan is killed, there are two girls that come, and they come early to kind of see the scene there. And as they come, that table is broken with just a loud crash, and the lion is gone, and they're looking around, and then he appears right there, and they're shocked. He's alive. He was dead, and now he's alive. And so, you know, the amazing picture is there. But the author of the story, the narrator, explains what happened. And this is what he said. He said, I'm just going to quote a couple of sentences here. He's explaining how it's possible that the lion would still be alive. And he said, it means that though the witch, the bad guy here, knew the deep magic, he uses magic to just describe these spiritual things. He says, there is a magic, there's a wisdom deeper still, which she did not know. Her knowledge goes back only to the dawn of time. But if she could have looked a little further back into the stillness and darkness before time dawned, she would have read there something different. She would have known that when a willing victim who had committed no treachery was killed in a traitor's stead, the table would crack and death itself would start working backwards. What he was saying here is the bad guy in here said, I've got him. I've killed him, and he's dead. He gave himself for that foolish human, and now he's dead, and I've won. And he said what she didn't know is there was a deeper wisdom that goes way back beyond that. And because he knew about all of those things, because he had full understanding, it worked backwards, and now he's alive. And, of course, they go to conquer the enemy, and there's a great battle and things like that. The point there is that's exactly how wisdom works. Wisdom understands the deeper things of life. It's not just what you see on the surface. And that's what she's saying here. She's saying, listen, if you're going to follow my ways, there's more to life than what you can just see on the surface. Lady Folly is going to offer you everything on the surface. She's going to offer you everything you can possibly see. But what I have to offer you is prudent. It's under the surface. Knowledge of witty inventions. It helps you understand how life works beyond what you can see right here. These are qualities that you need in your life. And so she continues here, and we're going to just quickly look through the rest of these here. In verse 13, she tells you what she has here. She says, the fear of the Lord, following my ways and fearing the Lord, is to hate evil. Pride, arrogancy, and the evil way, and the froward mouth, do I hate. And what she says here is, if you follow wisdom and you fear God, then you are automatically going to hate what God hates. And she lists a few of these things: pride, arrogancy, the evil way, the froward mouth, the forked tongue. We've covered these things before. These are things that God hates, and there are others as well. And what she is saying is, if you pursue wisdom, you're not going to have to worry about all of these other things. If you're pursuing wisdom, you're automatically going to hate what God hates. If you love what God loves, you're going to hate what God hates. There's some things that if you go a certain way, there are certain things that come along with it. If you live in Texas during the summertime, and this is my first summertime living in Texas. I've lived close to Texas, but not quite there. You don't usually have to remind people to drink water during the summertime when it's like 100 and something degrees outside. You just do it. You don't have to say, are you drinking water? Of course. Am I dead? No, I'm drinking water. And you don't have to usually remind people of that. If you're the mother of four children, you don't deal with boredom. My wife is never bored. That's one thing she doesn't have to worry about. There's always something going on at the house. That's one thing you don't have to worry about. And there are certain things that just come with the territory. And she says, listen, if you fear God and you follow wisdom, then all of these things that God hates, you don't have to try to, oh, I got to make sure I don't do the things that God hates. If you're loving wisdom and doing things that are wise, then you're not going to struggle with those things. There are things that you will struggle with, but if you're on the right path, then you're not going to have to worry about the things that are way on down other paths. You're not going to have to worry about those things. If you're fearing the Lord, then to fear the Lord is to hate evil. To fear the Lord is to stay away from pride, arrogancy, and the evil way. You're going to hate those things. You're going to stay away from those things if you're following wisdom. She mentions here some more of her qualifications, and just very quickly, she says, counsel is mine and sound wisdom. She mentions being, she says, I am understanding, I have strength. These are valuable tools. These are things that wisdom has. Counsel, wisdom, understanding, strength. Compare that to what Lady Folly had. What did she have to offer? She offered, a tapestry on her bed and things that smell good. And she offered, an all-night of love and things. Just very, very flighty, surfacey things that do not last. And what Lady Wisdom has to bring to the table is amazing things compared to that. There are things of substance. And so she's offering these things and says, this is what I have. Look at verse 15 and 16, she talks about this company, this regal company that follows her. By me, kings reign, and princes decree justice. Princes rule, and nobles, even all the judges of the earth. This is how kings do business, is with wisdom. And here she's referring to successful kings. Think about Solomon, who wrote that, and his father David, who reigned as a very wise king and coordinated battles and was very successful and organized a nation after they had been kind of torn apart with King Saul and very confused. He brought order into things and he honored God and achieved success and peace and wealth. David did all kinds of things, but he did it through wisdom. I can't help but think about our own founding fathers at the beginning of our nation. And if you read their stories, they were deep men. They were men that had a lot of deep understanding with how things went. Men like Ben Franklin, who were very wise and could and very witty. I mean, if you read the things that they said, just very in tune with life and with how things work. And a man like he who called Congress to prayer and said, listen, we need these things. They're very wise. Men like George Washington, these were not just politicians like we're used to referring to politicians. When you say politicians, it's almost a derogatory term now. I mean, that's what is being said. I mean, in the election right now, a lot of the things that certain candidates have going for them is that they're not a politician, because that's a bad thing. Our early founding fathers were not politicians like that. They were wise men, very wise men. They were men like George Washington, I mentioned, who was a well-mannered gentleman. He was a man of prayer. He was a man with experience. He was a man that used that experience and used that wisdom and understanding to lead an army. And I mean, on down the list, you look at amazing heroes in our early history, and that's why our country was founded in the way that it was. And that's why it was founded. The documents that they made 200 years ago are still able to guide us today. And that doesn't just happen from people that are there, you know, to appease some kind of, you know, group over here or group over there. That's not what they were doing. They were wise men. And she's saying here, listen, if you have a wise government leader, a wise politician, and that doesn't have to be an oxymoron, she said it's going to come. It's going to come because they have wisdom. Verse 17, we see her accessibility. She says, I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. There's so much potential here because if there's a person out there who longs to be wise, who wants to be wise, who loves wisdom and says, oh, I wish I could be wise, she says, then I love them. I am accessible to them. And those who seek me will find me. They're not like, it's not like I thought of, you know, have you ever played with a cat with a laser pointer? It's a terrible thing to do, but it's fun. And you kind of bring that little red dot around and the cat jumps for it and it moves and jumps for it and it moves. And that's what the seductress does. She's just kind of teasing and teasing. There's never any satisfaction. They never catch the dot or whatever. Wisdom says, look, if you seek me, you will find me. You have a direct line. It's not a red dot on the floor. It's almost like the red phone, you know, that you get a direct line. You pick it up and it just rings. People don't even know what those are because we don't even have phones with cords on them. There's just cell phones now, so whatever. But whatever the equivalent of that is. So it's a direct line. If you want wisdom, you can find it. And it says that those who seek me early shall find me. If you seek me early in life, so much better to seek early in life before all the mistakes have been made and figure life out before you get into the city and seek early there, early in your problems. Don't wait until the problems have come. Don't wait until you've made a mess, but before the mess has been made. Those who seek me early will have wisdom, even early in your day. There's ways to apply it in that way, to say early in my day. How much better is it to start your day with the Lord and to start your day looking to God for wisdom for all the things that might happen because you don't know what a day holds. And if you seek wisdom early, then you will find it. And that's what she's laying out here. And finally, there's a lasting value here. She mentions again riches and honor, durable riches. Her fruit is better than gold, her revenue than choice silver. And again, you know, she says in verse 21, I may cause those that love me to inherit substance and will fill their treasures. Wisdom isn't all about finances. It's not all about wealth. It'll certainly straighten out financial problems along the way. But there's something here that will truly enrich your life. And that's what she's trying to say. It's more than just financial things. This is for a good life. Paul Chappell said this. He said, respond to God's invitation to seek wisdom, and you will benefit from it for the rest of your life. That's what he's saying. If you respond to wisdom's invitation, it will help you. And it's not just a money thing. It's not just any one of these things. It's all of these things. And so here Solomon urges his son to respond positively to wisdom's invitation. It's a simple invitation. He urges his son, respond positively to this because she will give him a life of lasting value. So as we look at life and as we consider these things tonight, I don't think there's a one of us in here that could say, I've always chosen the way of wisdom. Probably not. But when I have, there is substance there. Every single time, every time that I have chosen the path of wisdom, and you could probably say the same in your own life, when you've listened to wise counsel, when you've sought God's direction on things, He's given substantial direction every single time. So what happens if I find myself in a way that's not wise? What if I find myself off the path? Well, then turn around. Go the other direction. The Bible calls that repentance. If we're going the wrong way, there's still hope for wisdom. She's crying not only to the simple, but also to the fool. There's hope there for all people. Her invitation is an open invitation, even to those that have already messed up their lives. And so as we consider our own path and our own life, we need to follow wisdom. If we're on a path that leads to nowhere, if we're on a path that is going to become a problem, it's a wrong road, then we need to backtrack. We need to come back. And every turn, every step of the way, God is there to help us, to give us instructions so that we don't waste our time. Don't you hate it whenever you get lost and you're going down a long road, and you have to waste your time to wait for the turnaround or to finally turn around somewhere, and you're just a waste. It's frustrating. It's a waste of time, and then you backtrack, and it's just all messed up. God doesn't want us to waste our life and waste our time doing things in our life that are foolish. He's saying, listen, before you even start out, as you're at the gate, listen to wisdom's instruction and walk in the ways of wisdom. Whether you're simple or whether you're a fool, you are invited. And this is an invitation that demands a response. As God gives out the invitation every day, we have the opportunity to follow wisdom's path or to say, no, I'll just kind of do things my own way for a little while and see what's there. You know, I don't want to just do this way right now. I want to kind of make my own path. And you can do that as we go through the gates of the city into life. There will certainly be other options out there. But we need to make sure that we choose wisdom. She offers the invitation, and if we respond positively to that, she will give us a life of lasting value. And so it's kind of dramatized out here for us. And next week, we'll look at the last half there as we look at wisdom's resume and how God uses wisdom. It really is amazing that God allows us access to this. And it's available to everyone. It's much like the way of salvation. It's offered to everyone. And as a Christian, we have opportunity to be able to think like God thinks. And it's right there available to us if we will seek it. And so I just want to encourage you as we go throughout our life to seek wisdom first in our life and to accept her invitation. Let's have a word of prayer, and then we'll take some prayer requests tonight. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I thank you so much for your word that you've given us. Lord, I thank you for the invitation that you've given us to follow wisdom. And Lord, it's so simple. It's such a simple invitation, but it is loaded. And Lord, I think of how many times we choose the way of folly, we choose just kind of our own path, and the options are right there. Wisdom is right there waiting for us, and you've given us your word. You've given us everything that we could possibly want in order to have understanding in our life and to do life well. Lord, I thank you for the wise instructors that you've placed in my life and in all of our lives, Lord. I thank you for the valuable lessons that you've taught me, Lord, through those. But Lord, as each of us go forward in our futures, we're going to have another opportunity, another choice, whether we will accept wisdom or whether we will do things our own way. And so, Lord, help us to remember this, that your Holy Spirit would bring these texts back to our minds as we face our choices, as we begin our day, as we begin new sections of life. Lord, just help us to seek you and to seek your direction, and just lead us, Father, so that we can be effective for you. Lord, we just ask your blessing on the rest of the time we have here tonight, in Jesus' name.